From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. If your spouse were to suddenly pass away, would you know how to get in touch with your life insurance agent? Maybe if they passed away, would you know how to get in touch with the person that cut your lawn? If a parent went into a coma, would you know how to find their regular doctor? There are dozens of details of our day-to-day lives that we don't write down or that we don't share with other family members. And that can make a death or a serious illness even more traumatic for those that we love. It is hard to think that we won't live forever, but it is a reality. And making a plan for your loved ones is a kindness that many experts say will help them at the very hardest time in their lives. So joining us today to talk more about this are Dr. Jessica Everett and nurse practitioner Emily Getlin-Marquis. They are both hospice and palliative medicine specialists with St. Luke's Health System, and they will be talking about these issues at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Boise State University next week. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Hi, Gemma.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
As I mentioned, there are so many daily things that we don't write down, right? I mean, I mentioned lawn care, maybe car insurance. Who's the babysitter, right? Or how to get in touch with the babysitter. Can you talk about some of these things that we know, but maybe our loved ones might not know about, but they probably should know about?
Sure. This is Dr. Everett. So, for most of us, our affairs are no longer contained within a lockbox and a checkbook, and we're in a digital world where many things live behind passwords or in apps or websites. And so it can be really important to make a list of how to access all the things that are important in our world and in ensuring that our affairs can be handled. As you mentioned, when we don't do this, we really set up our loved ones, family and friends to have increased stress and uncertainty in already difficult times, whether we get sick, whether we have a decline in our brain function, or we experience an accident.
In a lot of families, one person pays all the bills, right? And maybe they don't share that with the other spouse. I mean, in our family, my husband pays all the bills, but let me tell you, he has a file and he has shown me where everything is. And so and that has so much more information in it. What happens, Emily, if someone doesn't do that, and should they kind of have a file or a system in place that they share with that other spouse or family member?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we think about those things ahead of time. I think what Dr. Everett and I see most of the time is that people also haven't considered preparing for situations where they might not be able to speak on their own behalf about the type of medical care they'd like to receive if they were suddenly very sick or had an accident. So we spend our time talking with people upstream as much as possible about what kind of medical care is important to them so that their loved ones aren't having to guess about that while also having to handle the logistics of life that they might not typically have to do on a daily basis.
Dr. Everett, why do you think people don't write stuff down? I mean, I don't know if it's thinking we're immortal. Is it more that we feel like, well, if I speak it, then I might be putting something, traumatic out there in the world, and I don't want that to happen?
Yeah, Gemma, I think that's multifactorial, but as you mentioned, when we think about difficult things happening, whether that's getting sick, losing our independence, losing our functioning, or a decline in our quality of life, it can almost seem by just thinking about these things that we will manifest them. At the same time, most of us do not want to put our loved ones, family in a hard situation. And so the more we can potentially do this for others, if it's difficult to do it for ourselves, I think that will facilitate the process.
So I also want to talk about palliative and supportive care, because this is also both of your line of expertise. For folks who maybe aren't familiar with those terms, Emily, can you explain just what that is?
Absolutely. And most people, Gemma, are not familiar with palliative care. So we really appreciate the opportunity to get to speak about what we do. Palliative care is team-based care that offers an extra layer of support for people living with a serious illness and for their families at any stage of that illness. Dr. Everett, would you like to add, maybe flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, sure. To build on that, you know, we facilitate what's called advanced care planning, which is planning for the type of health care that you want to receive in the future. We also take time to align with each person's personal goals and how they define quality of life and want life to be as things get more difficult in terms of health or debility.
Mm. Dr. Everett, how is caring for someone with a serious or a terminal illness different from maybe what healthy people experience within our medical system, if that makes sense?
Totally makes sense. I can speak from both personal and professional experience. You know, medical care in healthcare systems across the country really suffers from complexity and disjointedness, despite a lot of efforts to be more what we call patient-centered. And then when you have a serious or terminal illness, you are much more likely to have to seek care in uncomfortable or restrictive environments like the emergency room or the hospital. And you're more likely to get into a place where multiple body systems are getting sick and they can actually be in conflict with one another. For instance, sick kidneys may need more water or fluid. But if your heart's also sick, then that fluid or water can actually make the heart worse. So for those that have progressive illness, the tools that doctors try to use don't always work in the same way they have in the past, and we have to take a different approach.
Mm. Emily, you've worked in the ICU, and you've worked with folks who are getting hospice care. Can we talk about the term quality of life? Because this can mean such different things for different people. And how do you find out what it means for your patients and their families, but also, I think, how do you get family members on board with what the patient wants?
Absolutely, Gemma. Those are all great questions, and they really get at the heart of what we spend our time doing in palliative care. And one thing that makes our service really distinctive is the amount of time that we get to spend with patients and families. You know, often when patients aren't feeling well, they really aren't able to speak to those things. They just don't feel up to it. So we really do lean on their families to spend the time that it takes to get to know who this person is, what's important to them, what makes life good. And you're absolutely right. This means very different things for different people. It also means very different things for the same person at different points in their life. And certainly after they've perhaps been diagnosed with a serious illness, and their quality of life really changes. So you might have someone who has been living with chronic illness for some time and has been gotten used to living with a lot of physical limitations. And what might be most important to them is being home with their pets, being home with their family, just getting to spend time in the place that they feel comfortable. Whereas if you have someone who, you know, having physical limitations of a serious illness is a new thing in their life, then imagining their life without a fall hunting trip or without spring fishing is a very different situation. So this is where the interdisciplinary nature of our team really comes into play, because illness affects life. There's an illness, and then there's the human experience of an illness, not just physically, but also emotionally, maybe financially, logistically, spiritually. So we work hand in hand with amazing social workers, with spiritual care, with patient financial advocates. We can connect people with the resources that they need to help them live the best life that they can.
And Dr. Everett, you know, we started off talking about planning ahead for the end of life. I'm guessing that planning is even more important if you have a serious or a terminal illness. I mean, this has happened within my own family. When my brother, before he passed away 6 years ago, you know, he was leaving behind a wife and six children. Right. Okay. So he was very aware of needing to plan. And do you see that sometimes? I wonder, even in particular, maybe with younger patients, like my brother was 48.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people, it's not always related to age, whether people are ready to engage in planning. In fact, some people are in, you know, the eighth or ninth decade, and because they have felt so good for so long, they haven't planned. So I think that the willingness or the kind of focal point of planning is really different for different people, and you can't necessarily generalize it.
Okay, but it's so important to maybe be planning if you are facing a serious illness or terminal illness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's important to plan in terms of what kind of care you want to seek, what's important to you, and letting others know about that. But also the whole healthcare experience changes. So planning just before a doctor's visit is going to look very different because you have to prepare questions. You have to ask, you know, what the implications of one treatment or another are. So that planning can happen day to day, hour to hour, but also over the span of weeks, months, or years.
I want to thank both of you for talking about this. I know it can be an uncomfortable conversation, but it is necessary. So thank you. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me, Emma.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely.
Good to be with
you. We've been talking with Dr. Jessica Everett and nurse practitioner Emily Gilton Marquis. They are both hospice and palliative medicine specialists with St. Luke's Health System. They'll actually be teaching a two-part class at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Boise State University. This will be next Thursday, so mark your calendars if you do want to attend and get more information. And we should mention that St. Luke's is a sponsor of Boise State Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.